We're joined on the phone right now by Christopher McDougall. And Christopher McDougall. He has written for the AP News, Outside Magazine, the New York Times Magazine, and currently he's been writing for Men's Health along with Runner's World. Lives in Pennsylvania with his wife and two daughters. And last year he wrote a book which has become a national best-selling book. It's called Born to Run. Christopher, thanks for joining us here at WTIP.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You know, the last running book that I thought was a really good read was Kirk Johnson's To the Edge, which was about the Badwater 135 race.
Sure.
But your book, I mean, it's just so much more depth and is one of the best reads that I've read on any topic the last couple of years. You put together a bunch of incredible characters. You know, a former prize fighter who drops out of society, you know, a lost native tribe, the Terra Umara, this crazy barefoot runner, you know, that's just, I mean, it's just a great group of characters and maybe the most incredible ultra trail race that's ever been held here. And through all of that, you know, there's a common theme of unhealthy science and the love of running. And all this came from a foot injury you had from trying to run like 3 to 5 miles around the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I like the way you put that, unhealthy science. It was just exactly that. You know, I was constantly getting hurt running, and I don't mean a lot of running. I'm not talking about, you know, sort of bad water across Death Valley kind of stuff like you mentioned in Kirk Johnson's book. Just a couple miles a couple of times a week, and yet I was constantly getting heel pain and arch pain and Achilles pain, and doctors kept telling me, you know, what do you expect? You know, running's bad for the body, and you should stop. And that's why it came as such a shock to me to realize that there are people out there that can run hundreds of miles at a time and never get hurt.
Yeah, it's just this thought that somehow you're not built for running is a theme that you kind of broke down in your book, going back to the early times of human history when we survived on running.
Exactly. I mean, that was what was puzzling me. When I first heard about the Tarahumara Indians and realized this is a tribe that's been living in seclusion at the bottom of this network of canyons in Mexico, and found out that these are people who are still running super long distances deep into old age, like 70 and 80 years old, and they're still running 50, 60, 100 miles at a time. And they don't have modern running shoes. They don't have modern sports science. So that's what I wanted to figure out. Now, how is it they can do it and we can't? And the second question I wanted to figure out was, you know, if humans evolved to be such great long-distance runners, then how is it it's such a problem for all of us now? If that's supposed to be our greatest natural gift, then how come we seem to get hurt whenever we try to do it? That's what really sort of led me on this quest.
Now, did you see that theme developing after Nike invented the cushion running shoe? Is that where your research began, or is that what you were led to through this research?
That's what I was led to by accident and slowly, because you know I just took it as a given early on that, of course, modern running shoes are an advantage. I didn't even question that because I thought, well, you know, how can cushioning be bad? So whatever is wrong with us that allows somewhere between 50 and 80% of all runners to get hurt every year, whatever it is, it's not shoes. And that's why it came as a total shock to me to realize deep into the research that no, in fact, it actually is the shoes, that there is no record of incidences of running injuries prior to the creation of the modern running shoe. And now that a lot of studies are starting to catch up with some of the allegations that I make in the book, it's pretty clear that at the very least, the running shoes do nothing, and most likely they're actually causing the very problems they're supposed to prevent.
And then you head down to Copper Canyon in Mexico, which is so remote and so vast. It's larger than the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And it's also parts of it infested by Mexican drug lords.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's where the Tarahumara reside, and they've been basically living there in seclusion since the 1600s. The only difficulty is, of course, when you have a place that's really hard to get into, it's also a really great place to set up your drug smuggling operation. So essentially the only two inhabitants of the Copper Canyons are a reclusive tribe and reclusive drug cartels, and it's very hard to get past one in order to access the other.
And you find yourself looking for somebody named Caballo Blanca.
Yeah.
And
right.
Of all the people to be looking for, here's a guy that dropped out. He dropped out in the Copper Canyon to avoid people like you.
Exactly. You know, I didn't even realize he existed until I was down in the Copper Canyons, and I finally did locate a Tarahumara settlement. But, you know, it sort of came to me with late recognition that they obviously wouldn't have any reason to want to talk to me. You know, the way you remain a reclusive tribe is by not talking to strangers who show up asking questions. But they did tell me about a guy named the White Horse, Caballo Blanco, some guy that had appeared down the canyons years earlier and was essentially in search of the same things I was looking for, the secret of not only how to run long distances, but the connection between running long distances and a society that is free from heart disease and diabetes and warfare and violence and domestic abuse, that somehow there's a bridge between great physical endurance and great social harmony. So that was it. So I sort of veered off from the Tarahumara and went in search of this guy, the mysterious White Horse.
Now, when we talk about the society of the Tarahumara and why they are so healthy, that goes beyond running, but it dawned on me as I'm reading this book, why are they running? Because they're no longer running after game, as early man did, to run it down, but they're running for the sheer joy of it.
Exactly. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is there's a pretty dominant anthropological theory that 2 million years ago, the one natural advantage we had as early humans was our ability to run long distances. You know, compared to other animals, we're not strong, we're not fast, we don't have fangs, we don't have claws. We have nothing with which to defend ourselves and also to track down and kill other quarry. The only advantage we have is that when it comes to running long distances, we excel. And primarily it's because our bodies vent heat extremely well. Most other land-based mammals vent heat through respiration. They pant it out like a dog on a hot day. But humans vent heat through through perspiration. We sweat it out. So the theory is just this, is that for nearly 2 million years, the way we ran game to death was by going out on a hot day and chasing like an antelope, for instance, until it fell over from heat exhaustion. So that comes down to one thing, then. If this is our greatest natural gift, then it should be a gift that is psychologically rewarded, that the more we do it, the better we should feel. And that's what I think the Tarahumara have never forgotten, that running can really be a joy and a pleasure if it's treated that way.
And somehow they've been able to isolate themselves enough so that they're not influenced by the technology, which has taken us away from it.
That's exactly right. You know, it's funny because when you start to check folklore and mythology in all other cultures, you know, you see running is always associated with freedom and vitality and youthfulness and joyfulness. It's only in our lifetime, literally since the 70s, that running has somehow become associated with fear and pain and injury. You know, you're being afraid that you're going to hurt your knees or you're going to get injured. And that's something relatively new.
And your research, along with Caballo Blanco's and other folks out there who have discovered the same thing who you bring up in your book, leads you to believe that they avoid those injuries.
Exactly, yeah. One thing that's really remarkable about the Tarahumara, when you spend time with them, is seeing how nimble older people are, that the elderly Tarahumara are still running these incredible distances on hard terrain. And that really speaks to the fact that they don't get injured and that they don't fear running.
And of course, they're not exactly barefoot. They have sandals on, but they're just rubber sandals.
Exactly. I mean, there's nothing wrong with shoes. You know, protection for the foot is a wonderful thing. Where we went off the rails was when we started to outthink nature and start to add correction. And we started to put in these cushioned heels and arch supports and these medial posts and these motion-controlling devices, and that was the problem. You know, once again, it's the unintended consequences of technology.
Now, here you are down in the Copper Canyon. You've managed to find your way to Caballo Blanco, the White Horse, and he's forming a race, an incredible idea of bringing Scott Jurek down, who's probably the finest ultra trail runner in the U.S., and he's also bringing a couple of his invitation has brought some other folks along as well, who are very interesting people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the startling thing for me was that anybody would actually take Cavallo up on his offer of this race. What he wanted to do was let it be known that there is some really important ancient wisdom down here that the rest of us were missing out on. So he spread the word that he was going to be trying to put on a 50-mile race between the Tarahumara and any other outside runners who wanted to make the trip down there. Since I had made the trip and realized how grueling and dangerous it was, I was pretty certain that nobody was going to bother to show up there. But I wrote an article for Runner's World and basically sort of put the smoke signal up in the sky that this event was going to take place. And one by one, I started hearing from people like Scott Jorick, whom we mentioned, kind of Billy Bonehead and Jen Shelton, these two kind of wild surfers from Virginia who are also ace mountain runners. A guy named Barefoot Ted, who liked to train by pulling his wife and daughter in a rickshaw through the street, through the streets of Burbank. And this little band of about seven ultra runners, we made our way back down to the Copper Canyons for this climactic race.
Now, this had to be really exciting for you. You know, I think of Scott Jurek, and he is kind of the god among ultra trail runners at the moment. You get to run in the same race with Scott. Also, he kind of legitimized the Badwater 100 when he jumped in there and among those crazy people and won it a couple of times. So it had to be exciting.
It was amazing. It's you know, it's like having a local charity fun bike ride and having Lance Armstrong show up, and not just show up for the race, but to show up for the entire trip. So you get to be with him and talk to him and ask questions. And that's one of the beautiful things about a sport like ultra running, because I had two revelations about the sport, because I'd never heard of ultra running before getting involved in this whole operation. But the first is I expected it to be a sport full of like really obsessed weirdos, and it was the exact opposite. I just found these really vital, fun-loving, happy-go-lucky people are the ones who are predominantly in ultra running. And secondly, it's a sport without prize money, without sponsorship. Basically, it's just not polluted by cash. And so you don't have cheating, you don't have doping suspicions, you don't have over-aggressiveness. It still is one of these old throwback amateur gentlemanly sports.
We're speaking with Christopher McDougall, and Christopher has a book out, a best-selling book called Born to Run. And, you know, you just mentioned that we don't have cheating, but sure enough, the local tribe where the race was held decided to take a couple shortcuts.
Well, what happened was there are various groups of Tarahumara who live throughout the mountains, and some live closer to modern civilization, some further away. And unfortunately, those settlements, which are close to modern roads and modern villages, they've sort of lost the running tradition. And there were those who, trying to compete with their more traditional Tarahumara, who are still ace runners, were cutting some corners.
And Caballo Blanco was Johnny on the spot, spotted it and straightened that situation out. I saw another thing I read in your book that was fascinating to me, and that was the energy drink that they've developed, Tarahumara.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I had read about this sort of magical potion in a book by Carl Lumholtz. Lumholtz was this great explorer of the 1800s who had spent time in the Copper Canyon with the Tarahumara. And he has this very vivid description of just being absolutely at the limits of his energy and just, you know, dropping of exhaustion. And a Tarahumara woman gave him a drink of something called isquiate. And what isquiate is chia seeds, like a chia pet, that you soak in water and you mix with some lime juice and some honey. And it forms this really tasty drink. So Lumholtz described having a drink of isquiate and suddenly feeling this new energy pulsing through his veins like Popeye eating a can of spinach. And when I was down in the Copper Canyons the first time in search of the Tarahumara and Cavallo Blanco, I got a chance to taste some of this chia beverage. And it truly was really, really fortifying. And I still sort of get some chia seeds to this day. I mean, chia is the Mayan word for strength. And for a long time, chia was a major cash crop of the Americas. The entire Mexican state of Chiapas is named for chia.
Now, did you do anything with this information, or has anybody tried to develop this beyond that local area?
I'm not going to. And, you know, it's, the difficulty is, you know, I get messages from people all the time, very excited, and, you know, they got chia seeds. And the problem is, you know, chia is a wonderful calorie substitute, but it's not really effective as a calorie supplement. And I think we have this notion in the United States that there's always some magic pill that's going to make us better. And all chia does is it's a really helpful way to replace some of the calories you're taking by other means. But it's not going to make you any more powerful than you already are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it wasn't a magic potion.
Well, again, you know, if you're really malnourished and dehydrated at the bottom of a canyon, as I was at the time, yeah, it was fantastic, you know. But up here where I've got enough, you know, Haagen-Dazs within arm's reach, then no amount of chia is really going to make a difference for a poor diet.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about your experience during that race. You've never run an ultra, and we're talking about 50 miles on a narrow canyon trail. It's tremendous ups and downs, as you can imagine, something deeper than Grand Canyon. You've only been running 3 to 5 miles prior to that. How did you manage that, and how did your body and your mind feel?
It was less than 3 to 5 miles. I'd actually given up running years beforehand because I'd suffered my last injury, an aggravated cuboid, which I didn't even know what that was, but it was just a blinding pain in my foot, and doctors had recommended for the last time that I quit running, and I did. And so I hadn't run a step in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years.
And we should tell people that you're 6'4 and about 230.
Yeah, it was back then. I'm still 6'4, but I've dropped those 30 pounds. I'm down around 200 now. So what had happened was I stopped running and assumed it was sort of bad for a guy my size. And then after I met Caballo and spent time with the Tarahumara, I became really excited about the possibility of running the way they ran, and particularly because Caballo was planning to put this race on within 9 months. So I came back home thinking, you know, if I can learn to run the way they run, then I can actually do this 50-mile race. And I had a pretty strong degree of skepticism that I just wasn't going to be able to do it, but what I found was by radically changing the way I ran, by learning to run without shoes, learning to run really lightly and gently and quickly, that it was easy for me to go from no miles at all up to 50 miles.
It's pretty incredible what you were able to accomplish, and also incredible that book that you produced, because it's not only extremely entertaining even to those that don't run, but there's an awful lot of information and actually scientific data you put in there to back up a lot of the theories that are driving a real revolution in running equipment and thoughts of running techniques.
That's what was so exciting for me, was realizing there's so much information out there that had just been overlooked.
We've been speaking with Christopher McDougall, and Christopher has written a best-selling book, Born to Run. Christopher, is there a website that we can send folks to look more about your book and information on you?
Sure, yeah. They can go away to chrismcdougall.com, and there's a good amount of information about all kinds of subjects, about proper running style and the Tarahumara and anything I've come across in the past 2 years of research.
And I'm excited. I've read that you're on another topic now. You'll be writing a new book, and I can't wait for that to come out as well.
Oh, great. Thanks very much. I'm really eager to get my teeth into it.
I want to thank you very much, Christopher, for joining us here tonight and letting us know a little bit more about that great book that you've written, and we hope to hear from you in the future.
Oh, thanks so much. That was a lot of fun.